Little Man, a short story by Blake Kimsey. Ricky Jensen was a little shit in that crooked, gap-toothed smile of his, the one his cute little baby teeth abandoned for large, yellowing buck teeth, was his little shit calling card. See him smile, see a textbook little shit. Yet it was his buzzed haircut that reduced his face to nothing but a mouth and a pimpled forehead that even his dog wouldn't lick, and made you forget he had a set of eyes. He was a damned child with gangly arms and legs and an air of little shitness who had no choice in the matter because it was a matter of DNA, plus corn syrup, plus a diet of microwavable foods, plus his father's suicide that made him the way he was. Terrible. Here he was at the tail end of summer, standing on the oak tree line that banded his house on three sides, rigging a booby trap to prove once and for all to his freckle-faced, hairy-armed little sister Lily that she should have heeded his advice and kept away from his fort in the woods and the trails he'd hoed and whacked into place with their father's tools. Clearing the path was a hard-earned triumph for Ricky, because the tools were rusted and crappy, and the forest was thorny and overgrown, and the job had occupied a full week of his summer vacation. But he'd done it, the little man. He was just starting to get short curlies on his balls, and light watercolored hairs pushing through the soft folds in his armpits, and if he looked at himself from a certain angle in the mirror, he could see peach hair on his upper lip that could justify, if he wanted to, a clean shave. Ricky's new body odor, which Donnie Perkins, the oldest kid on his bus route, said smelled like his fingers after touching a sweaty vagina, was part puberty, part soiled jean shorts, and three-day-old underwear. It proved he was on the cusp of running things around here. This little man who marked his territory and the inside of his fort with found nudie magazines and unearthed beer cans that were faded from years of sun and soil. What a feeling! Never mind the poison ivy that somehow got inside Ricky's butthole when he was claiming the land, making it itch like a whole tube of Grandpa's Icy Hot was slathered up and down his backside. This land, son of a bitch, despite what some might say about deeds and mortgages, was his. You had to have a penis to claim the forest, and he had claimed it. Ricky squinted and looked up into the branches where the lever and pulley system he had built was swaying with the limbs in the wind. He'd tied a rolling hitch knot around a sizable piece of limestone and hoisted it into the canopy high above, where it was sufficiently camouflaged amongst the brown leaves because there were no seasons in Texas and the leaves didn't change colors. They simply and suddenly die one day before balding the limbs and blanketing the dirty beige grass below with a brittleness that crumbled and turned to dust when trampled underfoot. There wasn't such a thing as autumn down here, only girls named Autumn who'd been felt up by Donnie Perkins. Ricky, the little man, little shit, knew the block-shaped piece of limestone would certainly crush any child-sized or lily-sized or adult-sized skull except for his, because Ricky would start wearing a maroon motorcycle helmet when he went to his fort, just in case he tripped his own booby trap. He was proud of his work and the way he buried the trip wire under a mound of dirt and leaves. The only way he could trip his own trap, he knew, was if he were crashing from a sugar high and somehow forgot himself in the kind of light-headed stupor that sometimes overtook him after drinking a jug of Kool-Aid or a liter of Coke. But that could never happen now because Ricky was smart and realized his good fortune. Had he been out selling cookies door-to-door as a Girl Scout like his sister, instead of learning how to earn badges by tying knots, this booby trap might never have been. The little man liked to thank his penis for the opportunity to avoid cookie sales, because no adult ever bought a box of Girl Scout cookies from someone with a penis. To Ricky, penises were the ticket to the good life. Ricky circled his fort, trying to find the piece of limestone from different vantage points. He craned his neck and met the sun through the branches. He could see the glorious piece of limestone from almost anywhere. Of course, because he knew where to look. But if Ricky were on a leisurely stroll through the woods or trying to sneak into his fort, as Harry Lily was prone to do, he might not notice the limestone at all. No one thinks to look for limestone anywhere but where limestone should be found. Ricky had no sympathy for trespassers, unless it was Donnie Perkins bringing a pair of girly underwear for them to sniff over a couple Coca-Colas on the rocks. After circling the tree enough times to convince himself even a superhero or a government spy plane couldn't find the limestone, Ricky decided to call it a day and retreat to his house, where air conditioning and television and something brain-freezing and sweet, like a dozen popsicles, would be his reward. If his trap happened to ensnare a raccoon or a deer in the meantime instead of Lily, he was fine with that. All he'd need to do was reset the trap and wait until it fell on Lily. And he was happy to wait because he liked suspense and build-up, the kind of feeling he got watching late-night Cinemax after everyone else had gone to bed. When Ricky opened the fridge, the only popsicles left were the ones from last month that had freezer burn and were stuffed under a box of frozen chicken breasts all the way in the back. He discarded these banana-flavored popsicles for a reason. They sucked, and now they were his only hope for something sweet and brain-freezing, and he hated having to play a forced hand, just as his dad had always said he hated having to play forced hands, which is why, according to Ricky's mother, he voluntarily left planet Earth. Ricky stood in front of the fridge with the door open, letting the chill escape, itching the spot where new hair was growing below his waist. The sound coming from inside his underwear was similar to when he had put a handful of cornflakes into a plastic bag and shook it about like a crude rain stick. He liked the sound of itching hair, especially his new hairs with their short and stiff quality, a distinction he noticed with these new hairs as a self-proclaimed hair-playing musician. But these hairs were weak, like newborn babies, and prone to incidental plucking. Often, Ricky would free his hand from his pants to find one or two curly black hairs stuck under his fingernails, and then he would have to blow them away and make a wish as if they were eyelashes. After coming to the conclusion that the banana pops were the only sweet treats in the house, Ricky pried the frost-encrusted sticks from their frozen grave, taking a bit of the chicken breast box cardboard with them. He immediately thought his brain needed a dose of television, because it had been a few hours since the last dose of sitcom reruns and the woman judge show he really liked. There were stains on the carpet in the family room, arranged in random little constellations in front of the television, from soda or milk that would come shooting out of Ricky's nose anytime he laughed at a program. The carpet smelled like used toilet paper because the juices from Ricky's sweaty butt would leach through his jean shorts and soil the carpet when he sat in front of the television, rocking back and forth with delight anytime something was funny enough to cause him to rock back and forth, which was quite often. From a young age, Ricky was trained to laugh anytime a sitcom's laugh track gave him the cue, even if he wasn't paying attention and even if he didn't get the joke. And it seemed as if Ricky timed his laughs according to how much liquid he was holding in his mouth. A little game he played so his mother would have to come in and pinch him on the cheek before scrubbing the carpet clean. It was true that Ricky never cleaned anything because he knew they were a poor family, so what was the point? His mother's motto when it came to toilet water was, "If it's brown, send it down. If it's yellow, let it mellow." But Ricky didn't send anything down. Because, at 11, he was already a conscientious objector, not to mention a little man. In fact, after Ricky's father blew his brains out standing on the unearthed cemetery plot he'd bought minutes before, Ricky assumed all male duties. He took out the trash, opened airtight jars of pickles, and made sure all the doors were locked at night. The only male thing he didn't do was sleep naked in the same bed with his mother and watch the 10 o'clock news and comment, as his dad always did, that if it bleeds, it leads. Oh, and he didn't have a key to the liquor cabinet. But what did he care about that when the popsicles in the freezer were free for the taking? Ricky could hear his mother breathing through her mouth and knew she was standing just inside the family room. Her name was Charlene and she had halitosis, a big word Ricky didn't know the meaning of, but he did know that his mother had bad breath. She wore dull-colored pantsuits even though she wasn't a businesswoman or a Democrat. The thing about pantsuits, Ricky's mom would say, is that they are always on sale at the outlet mall, 3 miles up the road from their home, and the sale is always a good enough excuse to dress like a woman tapping on the glass ceiling, even if she isn't in business. The other thing about his mother's pantsuits that was a double whammy for Ricky was that Charlene never wore a bra, and the front seam of the pantsuit blouse was always placed just so, the perfect breast divider. Ricky didn't like seeing his mother's boobs any more than the next kid, but anytime the pantsuit seam parted, Like when she leaned over to pick up after him or when she would reach up to replace a light bulb, he had to concede that a motherly boob was better than nothing. Ricky didn't like to be lorded over by anyone, especially his mouth-breathing mother, so he broke the ice without looking over his shoulder. "What's for dinner, woman?" Ricky asked. "Ricky, what have we talked about calling me woman?" Charlene asked, standing in the entryway. "It's every man for himself tonight. There's hot pockets in the fridge." "When is it not every man for himself?" Ricky asked and itched himself. "I'd like a cooked meal every now and again." "Then get a cookbook or a recipe online, little man. This isn't the Holiday Inn." After a moment, the heavy breathing stopped and Ricky could tell from the reflection in the television screen that his mother was no longer standing behind him. Ricky considered the empty box of popsicles and realized it was already time to head back outside before it got too dark. He hadn't seen Lily in a while, and he knew if he caught her near the fort and if the booby trap hadn't already crushed her to death, then he would give her a titty twister because he knew how bad it hurt the little knots forming on her chest. The sun was almost gone, and the trees were dark outlines of themselves, making it difficult to gauge their depth. Ricky couldn't hear anything because the ear flaps from his maroon helmet covered his ears. Though he liked to imagine a pack of mangy wolves howling in the distance, possibly encircling Lily, slobbering and just about to pounce on her in a ravenous fit of hunger that could only be quenched with Lily flesh. Ricky wasn't a scaredy cat, but he was carrying a flashlight in case he stayed out past dusk. When Ricky got to the fort, he shined the flashlight into the branches and saw the piece of limestone hanging high above. He loved it out here because it was his, a place his mother never cared to visit, and Lily had only been able to sneak into on one previous occasion. His father had built the fort with little more than a hammer and a level, and Ricky had assisted, handing him nails and small pieces of wood as needed. His father pruned a few of the branches with a chainsaw that howled and cut through the thick wood, and its very sound made Ricky feel like a man because he got to stand so close to his father and yell timber at the top of his lungs, and he could taste the sawdust in the back of his mouth, and it was at these times he wished his name was Junior. It only took 4 weekends to complete, and the fort had been the talk of the neighborhood with its 2 floors and the open-air deck at the very top and the dictatorial rope ladder that could be pulled up at will to keep most everyone else out. But that was 4 years ago now, and the fort's wood had started to fade, and there was water damage and wind damage, and the fort itself looked like a giant parasite clinging to the tree for dear life. Come to think of it, Ricky hated this fort and his father and thought Harry Lily, the evil spawn of Satan's loins, could have the damn thing if she wanted it so badly. But Ricky was keeping the nudie magazines, and he'd still give her new breast bumps a good titty twist if he found her trespassing. When Ricky looked up, he saw Lily and her hair-covered forearms coming his way. She blocked what was left of the sun, and her outline in that ratty sundress bled into the tree line. Her arm hair was standing on end in a whir of static electricity, golden in the fading light. She didn't look like anyone in the family, and even though they couldn't afford braces, Lily didn't need them because her teeth had settled into her mouth as if God and Jesus had come down in a cloud car and set them with perfect godlike skill and dentistry, and then gave each other God and Jesus high fives that set off a series of thunderclaps around the world celebrating their very selective teeth-setting skills before heading back to heaven in the cloud car. Ricky hated Lily's teeth and wanted to kick them in because he needed braces and the family couldn't afford them because the month before he was going to go to the orthodontist, that money went instead to a sleek-looking, pure-grained coffin for his father. And despite his best efforts, Ricky still couldn't get his upper lip over his top row of teeth. It didn't help matters that all the boys at school liked Lily. Ricky knew there must be a glitch in the universe because none of her suitors seemed to mind the braidable hair on her arms, and these boys ribbed Ricky about her, especially that dickweed Donnie Perkins, who didn't have a governor on his mouth and told Ricky what he'd do to Lily if given the chance to play Spin the Bottle or 7 Minutes in Heaven at a co-ed party. Watching Lily defiantly walk towards his fort was one of those moments for Ricky that seemed to freeze in time and everything started to happen in slow motion. The last time the world froze was when Ricky realized he'd just masturbated for the first time while watching the Spanish language channel late at night, and the warm goo coating his inner thigh was drying like wood glue to his skin, and he knew nothing like that had ever happened before, and he calculated at that moment he would be able to replicate that feeling for the rest of his life. And all it would take was naked boobs, or a real girl, or more late-night Spanish television, and of course, some rubbing. This frozen moment was different, though, because it didn't tingle, and Lily was walking toward the pile of leaves hiding the tripwire, and Ricky thought he couldn't just stand where he was and do nothing, even with the hatred he felt for her. If he didn't quite know it, Ricky could feel that he was standing on the fault line of a philosophical conundrum, and at that moment, he couldn't reconcile how God and Jesus could fly around in a cloud car and fashion the limestone hanging high above and give Lily a perfect set of adult teeth and then allow the one, limestone, to destroy the other, perfect teeth. Without thinking, Ricky shouted, "No!" and took off in a labored sprint with his head bobbling under the weight of the helmet. Ricky got to Lily and pushed her out of the way as she tripped the wire. When Ricky looked up, the limestone was hurtling toward his face, and he had to admit he had an eye for stone and thought, if the profession weren't going the way of the dodo, he might make an awfully good stonemason or quarry worker. Then he thought if the limestone hit him just right, he might have to get emergency dental surgery. So he smiled big and had just enough time to consider these woods and the fort and his lucky stars, and how if his father could see him now, he'd realize he was a chip off the old block.